Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, Effigy Mounds National Monument is a must-see attraction for many in the Midwest. But before it became a national monument, a proposal was made to make it a national park. I'll talk with Joe Schomburg, who is hoping to revive that plan and turn Effigy Mounds into Iowa's only national park. Bill Whitaker, research director at the Office of the State Archaeologist, will also join us to share his thoughts. But first, Alicia Dill was only 17 years old when she joined the National Guard. Just a few weeks later, terrorists attacked the United States on September 11, 2001. With that event, the world and her world changed radically. She spent 6 years in the service, and now her experience in the military and as a veteran has inspired her to write a novel. It's called Squared Away, and it comes out on July 2nd. She'll be doing a reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City on July 2nd and doing a book signing at M&M Bookstore in Cedar Rapids on July 6th, and she is with me now. Hello, Alicia.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. And I want to, before we kind of dig into the novel, let's talk about you. So you were 17 years old and signed up for the National Guard. What prompted you to join the National Guard?
So at 17, one of the things that I wanted to do, I was a journalist in my high school journalism, and I decided I need experience in order to get a job, right? And in order to get a job, you need experience. And so something in me said, I think the Iowa National Guard is something so different and separate where you would be tested and you could really see what you're capable of and you'll get to travel. I think the recruiter said something like, you might get to go to Germany or something. And I was like, that sounds amazing, right? And so I decided to join, and I really joined just a couple of days after my 17th birthday.
Wow.
And I had braces on my teeth, and my dad had to sign for me to make sure that I could go. But I wanted to be a journalist for the Army. And so what that meant was at 17, I would start to be in a professional journalism environment, and I would get clips, and I would get articles, and I would have something to show for my service. So
it felt almost like putting yourself on the fast track.
Right. So I'm kind of a fast person. So at 17, I mean, I'd started working when I was like a little, like 11 years old, babysitting. I did tasseled corn when I was 13. I was always looking for that next thing. And so I'd worked my entire high school career. And so I really knew what it was going to take to get me where I wanted to go. And I thought that that would be a good springboard.
And you grew up mostly in Iowa City, right?
Actually, Cedar Rapids.
No, Cedar Rapids, okay.
Yes. I was born and raised in Osceola, Missouri until I was 8. So what that meant was we had a trailer, but we had 40 acres of land because land is important in Missouri. And so I learned at a young age that storytelling is an art form. And then my dad, he took a job in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and he moved his family up there for a better life. And what that meant was the best education that Iowa can offer. So I always say I got the best of both, a rural Missouri upbringing where you're running around with no shoes on, right? And then the best education that you can get in Iowa.
Had your family had a history with the military?
So my grandpa, who I never got to meet, he met me when I was like 2 years old. But he was in World War II and the Korean conflict. So I did have a history in the legacy of what he had done. And he was a very strong military army man. I also have cousins and uncles who've all served in the Navy, but I don't claim them because why would you choose to be on a ship with all those people?
All right.
We have to represent the Army here, right? But yes, I do have a legacy there.
So, all right, you signed up for the Army National Guard and you were clearly incredibly eager to get out in the real world and to do something important, to make a difference. And then 9/11 happened. What was your reaction? I remember, of course, everyone's reactions. We were all stunned. But as someone who had just joined the National Guard, what was going through your mind?
So that Tuesday, I was in Prairie High School's journalism lab, and I was watching CNN, which at the time I was kind of a big deal because I could actually see the stories unfolding. And I was like, oh my gosh, because all the kids in my class were just like freaking out and thinking like, what just happened? So that was the Tuesday. And that Friday, I had to leave for my first real drill, which was in, we traveled from Johnston, Iowa to Fort McCoy, Wisconsin in a Chinook helicopter. And that first initial drill, people were asking like at the gas station, like, are you going to New York? Like, no, I'm not. I don't know where I'm going or what I'm doing. But I was surrounded by a really great group of fellow public affairs people, and I'm still close to a lot of those people that were there with me in September of 2001. But what was running through my mind was I understood what I did with the oath, right? Because I was really proud to do that. But it got very real. And you have to ask yourself, like, at the end of the day, there's a lot of people that can claim that they signed up because they're a patriot and all that. And I always try to be very honest and say, I needed college money and experience. And so I was pretty nervous at 17 years old.
So you were actually still a senior in high school.
Yes, I was.
And did you find yourself during that year leaving school to go participate in training?
So it would be typically in the Iowa National Guard or any guard, you're going Saturdays and Sundays. But a lot of times we would leave, like that particular drill, we would have had to leave early because we had to drive down. So we'd leave on a Friday. And I still remember like trying to get my hair in the right, you know, regulation and trying to make sure everything was perfect, right? And I know I look back at pictures because we're journalists, so we have a lot of those, right? And thinking, oh my gosh, like I had no idea what I was doing there. But yeah, I don't remember specific times leaving, but usually it would be a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then you have usually 2 weeks of annual training a year, and that can extend to longer. But yeah.
So again, that was a time when things were changing really rapidly and troops were being sent around the world. So what was going through your mind as you were doing those trainings for a year? I mean, you must have realized, okay, you know, the idea of adventure and experience that I had in my mind originally has just shifted dramatically because we're now a nation at war.
I think on some level, I was proud. I was proud that so there was someone else that was going to join the Guard with me, and a lot of people talked about it. They were going to join the military. And a lot of people say, I almost signed up. Okay, well, I signed up. And a lot of people signed up. And it's those people that I want to be surrounded with. And I think there's conversations in my book that are conversations that I had at 17 and throughout my career with fellow soldiers that help you rationalize. But I was scared. And it's okay to be scared. I think there's like a famous Patton quote about being scared. It's not about that. It's about moving on despite being terrified, right? And you put that uniform on and you embody it and you try to say, okay, my grandpa wore this uniform and I want to make him proud because I'm sure he's looking down on me. And I want this to be a good reflection of that legacy that he carried.
When were you deployed?
So I was deployed in 2005. It was for a little over a year, and there was some in 2004 and 2006, but mainly 2005 to Kosovo.
And what did you do in Kosovo?
So I was very lucky that my job is a public affairs specialist because I get to do the thing I love, which is write stories and take photographs and edit magazines and go through that rigor that you would think of that journalism is, but with the Army. So you're telling the Army story. And a big part of what we did was we had 33 other nations there. And so we had a magazine that would go out to them, and it was called The Guardian. So I can say I wrote for The Guardian magazine and then pretend, you know, it was just a our local magazine that we had in Kosovo that would go to educate the troops or maybe push command messages or themes, you know. It would have columns from the generals And so I got to be a writer, and I would be out in helicopters and taking great photos and interviewing the people that had those jobs. And I really got to try on every single job in the military. So one day I'm with the medical team, and the next day I'm with the aviation team, and I'm trying out, like, what does it mean to be in this role? Because I'm telling their story.
You are just publishing this novel. So it's been a number of years since your service. You served for 6 years?
Yes.
Has this novel been percolating all this time?
It has. So I think when you're in it, when you're in the military, it is all consuming, whether you're in the guard or not, because your thoughts are there. You're not sure when you get called up. You might be going somewhere for 3 or 4 weeks at a time. And so for me, I always wanted to be a writer since I was a little 3-year-old kid who would turn books upside down and pretend that I was reading them, right? So, and that was accepted in Missouri. That's something like that's the dream, right? I took creative writing at Cornell College. They used to have young writers workshops. So I learned things like give your writing a kiss. And so I think that my biggest thing about writing this novel was it 10 years ago, I used it as a way to reflect on my experience. And I wrote it on like yellow legal notepads because I couldn't even be on the computer. I was so tired after working all day that I just started writing on legal notepads. And so my first crack at this, it's probably 100 times re-edited, was on legal notepads.
Wow. So in a way, it was therapy.
It was therapy. I have migraines, and so I knew that any extra time on the computer was not going to be a good thing. But the best part about the blank page is it's anywhere. It's at a park. It's, you know, in a cafe, and you're writing, and it's, you know, the details ring true. And now you're saying, like, maybe this isn't all coming together, but in patches, I feel that release. I feel this is something.
We are going to take a short break. Okay. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Alicia Dill. She has just published her first novel. It's called Squared Away, and it actually comes out on July 2nd. She'll be doing a reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City on the 2nd, and then a book signing at M&M Bookstore in Cedar Rapids on July 6th. And the novel is inspired by her military service, although there are lots and lots of fictional elements. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. And then later in the hour, an idea to turn Effigy Mounds National Monument into a national park. We'll explore that idea. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest right now is Alicia Dill. She is the author of the new novel, Squared Away. It gets released on July 2nd, and she'll be reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City on the 2nd and doing a book signing at M&M Bookstore in Cedar Rapids on July 6th. She grew up, at least the early years, in Missouri and then moved to Iowa and was educated in Cedar Rapids. She joined the Iowa National Guard just before 9/11, and she was only 17 years old. She spent 6 years in the service, and it is her service and the time after that has inspired this novel. And so many of the things you've been telling me, Alicia, about yourself are echoed in your main character in this novel. So first, just tell me a little bit about her.
So Joelle McCoy is her name, and she lives in Canton, Missouri. She's just coming back in throughout the main novel to live at home in a farm that she purchased with the money from her service. And she is a journalist at a small town newspaper. And she's trying to kind of understand, you know, what did I just do with all this time in the Army? And what did all that mean? But also, I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing, kind of an attitude. You know, things she thought were supposed to be maybe aren't quite like that. And she misses the military, but she also knows it was very hard for her.
And was eager to leave it.
Yes, exactly. So I think there's kind of that setting for her is, the average soldiers maybe experience. And so I think in a lot of times you hear of like a hero or, you know, we have memoirs about people, but this is more like what's her thoughts behind what her service meant and make it accessible for maybe everyone to understand.
And at the center of this novel is a friendship.
Yes.
She has a best friend that she made who she called her battle buddy. She made through the service. And just give me a thumbnail sketch of their relationship.
So you are issued a battle buddy when you go to basic training. So everybody in the military has a battle buddy and they'll know him right off the top of their head. And so her battle buddy was Concepcion Chapa, who had a very different upbringing and background than her. So she was coming from small town Missouri. Concepcion Chapa is coming from Miami, Florida. And just like that differences in cultures and experiences. But in basic training, you meet and you're supposed to stay together for safety reasons. So the Army really pushes that friendship and it lasts. Because in some ways, these may not be the people that you choose or that you would choose for yourself. But the Army sends them to you, and now you would really do anything for them. They could call at a moment's notice because every single part of your day in training is with them. And then after, you miss them because you're doing those things maybe by yourself, and you wish they were there. So even if you are anywhere in the world, if any one of my battle buddies, and I have a couple of them from different parts, I would drop everything to help them. And I think that that friendship, that bond that we talk about is unbreakable. And it brings a diverse group of people together because, again, you don't choose your battle buddy. It's chosen for you. And so that friendship, that bond in the novel, when she finds out her battle buddy is missing, I mean, everything in her is saying, I have to find her. I have to find out the truth, right?
And they bonded with each other under these intense circumstances and know each other incredibly intimately and again, as you said, would do anything for each other. But also, she has a little bit of a hero worship thing going on with Concepcion. Concepcion is cooler, stronger, tougher, more driven, and seems to know who she is in a way that Joelle doesn't.
Correct.
So why don't you read a little bit for us from the book, which is Joelle's exploring who she is and trying to figure out who she is without Concepcion.
Correct. So just to set this up, this is a Joelle, and she's actually telling a story to a doctor at the Veteran Affairs Hospital, and she's reflecting on something that happened in basic training. I set the scene of our final mission of basic training before we could graduate, which included a 10-mile ruck march in the South Carolina heat that lasted through the night after camping for 4 days in the wilderness. Fire ants, bug spray, and camouflage with baby wipe showers for the private parts. Chapa and I got in trouble from our drill sergeant for crossing our eyes at each other when he was talking. The resulting punishment took weeks to unfold, and we realized it right before our bivouac on the final mission. We were assigned to carry the squad automatic weapon, called the SAW, for 3rd Platoon, while the rest of the guys carried M16s. That meant 22 pounds with blank ammo carried in my arms, while the rest of the people had 8 pounds on the front. Everyone had 40 pounds on their backs. It was not an ideal scenario for someone whose nickname, Chicken Wing, was written in chalk on my Kevlar for safety reasons. She listened and wrote notes. I noticed a smile when I recounted my nickname for my long, scrawny arms. Monkey arms, my sister called them. I told the doctor about the march to the campsite and how I had to dig a foxhole with the only other tall girl in the squad, who we called the Jolly Green Giant. When night fell, they separated us all to stand guard in our foxholes. The Jolly Green Giant fell right asleep as we stood up facing the trees. I was tired, and I realized I could prop myself up using the stand of the saw and rest my forehead. I almost fell asleep. It wasn't the first time on guard duty that I thought I would pass out from exhaustion. About 2 a.m, I heard the trees rustling in front of me. I waited for a few moments, and realized someone was walking straight into my watch zone. I was scared and poked the girl next to me, but she was snoring. So I did what our drill sergeant said and yelled a challenge question. Where's the eagle? I waited for the password to come back as the word yellow. It was nonsense, but that was the point. Everyone memorized the question and the password so we could walk safely around the camp. The doctor leaned forward. What happened?
And you'll have to read to find out. That is Alicia Dill reading from her new novel, Squared Away. And Alicia, like I said, you have a whole lot in common with your main character, Joelle. When you got out of the service, did you experience that sense of wondering who you were without the military?
Absolutely. I think the first part is, you know, I reflected on, I made a decision to get out, right? And I made that, and it was the hardest decision I've ever had to make, because everything you think you have, all the success you've had as a journalist and the places you've been and the people you've met, that's wrapped up all in that military service. After I got out, you know, the first thing I did was I graduated college. I got my degree at University of Iowa. But a lot of my friends were in different parts of the world, right? And the University of Iowa students were worried about the latest cell phone, okay? And I was worried about human rights, okay? I was just thinking—
You were at a different part of your life.
I was at a different part of my life. I had seen things where I wanted so much for everyone to realize, like, people are people anywhere, right? And so I felt like I had come so far in my own growth, and not having the people who I felt understood that experience close to me was so hard. And I know that so many veterans struggle with that. It's something where you don't even want to bring it up sometimes, because you only want to talk about your experiences or stories or things with people that have that experience. And I did struggle, because I wanted people to care about what was happening in different parts of the world. And when they didn't get that sense of caring, and they were just on to the next thing, I mean, they would say things like, is Kosovo a city in Iraq? It's like, no. It's like, no. No, I'm not at the VA to pick up my grandpa. I'm here to get all the same services as everyone else, right? So I am sitting here thinking, like, that there's certain areas where you want to have that reinforced, and you're by yourself now. You can shower by yourself, great, but you don't have any of that shared friendship that you would have on a regular basis with the Army.
As a young woman coming out of service, do you think that's particularly challenging for young female veterans, because you don't fit the public idea of what and who a veteran is?
Absolutely. That is something that, even during this process, I'm reaching out and talking to other veteran authors. A lot of them have nonfiction memoirs. And so for me, I'm writing fiction, and I'm getting to play with the details. But a lot of them haven't identified themselves, or they don't talk about being a veteran to other people. They just don't want the questions. And so I do not look like the typical veteran, and you wouldn't know that I have military experience. And I did it so young, you know, 6 years. I was 23 when I got out, so you really wouldn't know. Something happened to my little sister. She's still currently serving, and there's something called superhero parking at Hy-Vee. So she is a teacher as well, and she's a military police officer and a sergeant. So she runs into the Hy-Vee, parks in there. She usually doesn't park there. She doesn't want to get the looks from people, and she's wearing a dress. So she puts her patrol cap in the front dashboard, and she runs in. And this just happened, you know, I think in the past year. And she comes out, and there's an older man with a veteran's hat on, and he's parked in the maternity one right next to it. But his wife looks at her like, I think you should say something. And so he proceeds to question my sister, my little sister, about her service. She's been in over 15 years, because she followed in my footsteps, and she stayed in, and she chose a different path. But he proceeded to ask her how to take down a weapon. What was the unit she's in?
So she had to prove that she was she was in that parking place.
She had to prove that. And I just don't think that would have happened if it was a male veteran walking out.
Even in civilian clothing.
Even in civilian clothing. And so you really have no idea who's next to you. And remember, when you talk about the military or veterans or any of that experiences, that they're all going to be different. And everyone's going to have a different viewpoint. But please listen to them, because that's the only way that I think things will move forward to have like a better service. The way we treat our veterans, male or female, is how you're going to get the next people to sign up. And if you don't treat them like they should be treated, then they won't. And you will lose out on talent and the most intelligent people that would join the Guard and say, I want to go do this and I want to be Army, right?
Have there been times since you've been back where you've just sidestepped your veteran status just because you didn't want to have the questions, you didn't want to talk about it?
Absolutely. And it's in those times where I'm like, you coward. You better go in there. So, you know, I've trained myself. I park in that superhero parking, and my nephew might be in the back of the seat like, what? You're a superhero? What does that even mean? And, you know, before you were born, you know, I had a uniform on. But I'm like, you know, I have pushed myself in the other years, because I also know that it's not really about me. It's all about the people who come after me. And I was able to use my experience and to get and to reach my goals because of my military. It's such a huge part of who I am. If I deny that when people ask, then they can never understand what, you know, maybe those issues are or how we can better serve the community. Maybe we have yoga for veterans, and like that mindfulness and the things that I can use as therapy might be helpful to someone else. It doesn't always have to be a cookie cutter way to serve a veteran. And I think, you know, we're out there, we look like everyone else, and you may not think that the girl in the dress running in is 15 years in, right? And is getting ready to be deployed again. So I think that mindfulness is important.
Your book is, there's mystery and intrigue and a little bit of adventure and a little bit of romance and some heartbreak too. So it's a fun read, but you also explore these really important topics. And I'm curious, what do you want people to understand about those military bonds? Because you spend so much time exploring the friendship between these two women and how deep it goes and how hard it is for Joelle to find another bond like that after she leaves the military. I get the impression in thinking about this character that although she really wanted to be out of the military, nothing in the civilian world is matching it. Nothing is as exciting or as intense or as engaging. And so she's really struggling with that. So what do you want readers to understand about those relationships?
So one of the things about the military, it's the most diverse organization that you're ever going to meet. So I had 5 different people in my basic training group. One was Navajo from a reservation. One was from Chicago. One was from Corpus Christi, Texas. One was from Puerto Rico. One was a Mormon. We had so many diverse people. When you go through things like in Kosovo, and when you're deployed with 33 different nations, and you're going through something with these women or men, because in some cases this will be the exact same bond for men, maybe even closer, I'm not sure. But I feel like the women part, you can't really replicate that when you're out, because friends, you can quit friends. You can change your number. Okay, they're asking me for a lot of things. I know I can't handle this, whatever. It's very selfish. In the military environment, it is not about you. It is about the Army. It is about us. It is about the unit. And you have something bigger than yourself. And so when you go through that experience, we say something in the military called embrace the suck. And when you embrace the suck next to someone next to you, all you want to do is remember that, like that we got through that because you were challenged and you met that standard and you made it. And the only people that are next to you are, you know, the people who you served with. And so it's 24 hours. Like I said, it is 24 hours. You're going to eat together, work out together, work together. Okay. There's only a certain number of showers together. I mean, I'm saying that there's even with family, I have 4 sisters. So 4 sisters means that like you are so close. You have your own language. Okay. You have your own situations. You can do a look across the room and they know what's up, right? That is different, but also similar to the Army, because it's a chosen brotherhood. It's a chosen sisterhood that you're in it. And like, you don't get to choose your family, but because you did the hardest part of your life with these people, you're going to stay that close to them for the rest of your life. And you will, whenever they call, you will move mountains to help them because that's your people, right?
This started as therapy for you. Do you feel like you got what you needed out of writing this? And we only have about 20 seconds left, so.
I really do. I think it's what I was born to do. And I think that this is what I know. So write what you know.
So. Alicia, what a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Charity. It was great.
Alicia Dill, she is the author of the new book, Squared Away. It comes out on July 2nd, and she'll be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City on the 2nd. She'll also be doing a book signing at M&M Bookstore in Cedar Rapids on July 6th. Coming up, a conversation about Effigy Mounds National Monument. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.